Hey, I'm Tony Moreland, and this is POW, the Samsung Developers Podcast, where we chat with innovators using Samsung technologies, award-winning app developers and designers, as well as insiders working on the latest Samsung tools. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 8. After taking a year off due to the pandemic, we recently held our annual developer conference, SDC 21. This year's conference was a virtual conference with insightful highlight sessions and in-depth tech talks. In this episode, I sit down with several Samsung insiders to recap some of the great moments from this year's show. We'll chat about One UI 4, the Samsung Incubation Program, SmartThings, Bixby, the new watch ecosystem, Samsung Internet, and our new podcast platform. Enjoy. So at SDC 21, one of the most interesting talk sessions that I watched was the Call for Innovator session, where they talked about the Samsung Incubation Program. And joining me on the podcast is someone who works closely with that incubation program, Alec Tishka, who's a manager, technology strategy and partnerships at Samsung. Hey, Alec, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Doing well. Let's start with, what is the Samsung Incubation Program?
Sure. So Samsung Innovation Program is an incubation program that we've launched already in Europe a few years back, and that we've expanded this year in the US. The program itself has two main goals. Is one, we want our business unit, the different groups at Samsung that work on digital appliances, TVs, smartphones, wearables, we want to give them a way to do very sort of rapid prototyping,
sure,
to quickly develop new products and services, but very highly innovative ones, things that wouldn't organically be created if we just did our everyday work. The other one is to also be able to work with the labs that Samsung have that work on very long-term projects. We want to have sort of all the brains that leverage all the brains we have at Samsung to create this long-term vision that we have about what are the services that people are going to use, what are the products that people are going to need, and try to find a way to bring these products and services to life.
Yeah, so I saw, in that session where they, talked about that need to innovate, and some of those technologies that came out of those partnerships were, like the health sensors with wearables, Z Fold, things like that. That's pretty interesting to think that those technologies came out of those partnership collaborations.
Yeah, I think when we start working with cutting edge technology, and you mentioned the Z Fold, especially some technologies that have been developed internally at Samsung for flexible and foldable screens, those are quite unique, right? There's only a handful of companies that make them in the world. And then if you talk of the scale at which we work with these, we don't make 5 foldable phones, right? We make tens of millions. So
sure,
when you work at this scale with those sort of bleeding edge technology, it just takes a lot of efforts to bring them to life. And Samsung alone can't really do it. We need to find partners and we need to work with them. And those are typically startups and all sort of the people that work around startups, incubators, accelerators, venture capitalists, industry experts. And we need to find the solutions to improve the product and bring these products to life.
Yeah. And I'm sure that, having that collaboration with those innovators really helps you think ahead, think into the future. Where do you need to go? Where do you need to focus your energy? So it's great that there is this program that allows Samsung to work with these innovators. So tell me, what are some of the details of the program?
So the program itself is a 6-month long program. We'll provide some funding to the company, anywhere from 20 to 100K, depending on what the companies do, if it's hardware, a software. There's no string attached with this funding. We don't take any equity, unlike some of the big household names like Y Combinators or 500 startups. And then we provide a lot of mentoring, mostly technical mentoring from our engineers in our labs.
Sure.
And the idea is just, to help them build a prototype, help them showcase a demo to our executive. Immediately after the program, after 6 months, there's two outcomes we're really looking for, and then we'll qualify as successful outcomes, is either investment or commercialization, meaning we'll work with the companies, we'll leverage your solution to build a product.
That's great. So in the Call for Innovators session, what was the key highlight, the key takeaway from that session?
Sure. The key highlight for us is really that we need partners. We want to be part of the ecosystem and we want to give back to that ecosystem. Startups are a major part of the ecosystem. They're very forward looking, and we want to leverage their ideas, and we want to contribute positively to them. We want to help them. And we want to be able to connect with the entire ecosystem behind these startups, the universities, the VCs, the incubators. We want to work with all these people. That's the main takeaway. Samsung wants to remain, you know, very innovative, but we want to do it with partners.
You know, my takeaway from that session was hearing that success story, FibriCheck, where they created that on-device ECG sensing that would help detect irregular and rapid heart rate using AI in our Galaxy Watch. And seeing that, you know, it wasn't just that we provided funding, but it was that collaboration where, you know, where we helped build the medical grade application. We, you know, helped with the regulatory approval, but then also learning that we helped with, you know, define what their business model was and their go-to-market strategy. That was really neat to see that success story that was shared.
Yeah, I think for especially when companies in the health space, right, it's a pretty fragmented space, right? There's a lot of device manufacturers in many different countries that have their own sort of regulatory constraints. By working with these types of companies, we provide a very sort of great way, a great go-to-market strategy for them. It's sort of built in. It's like, here's our wearables. We sell, you know, tens of millions of them every year. And they're very standard. They're very easy to integrate, and we'll support all their go-to-market, going to retail stores, and those sort of things. So it makes it easier for the company, right, to quickly grow their company. And for health specifically, that FibriCheck is such a great example of the sort of things we're trying to achieve, right? And there's a ton more we can do at that space. People are talking about non-invasive continuous glucose monitoring, maybe hydration as well in the future. And we want to find the companies building these features and try to work with them.
Yeah. And, you know, just at large, we've got this enormous ecosystem, you know, with our devices, you know, with Galaxy Store, SmartThings, Bixby. I mean, there's just so many areas that we can be involved with.
Yeah. The ecosystem we provide is huge. And it's sometimes hard for us to prioritize which companies we want to bring in into that ecosystem. Right. But going through a program like Samsung's incubation program, we're able to quickly filter for the best partners and focus our efforts on the ones that will most contribute to that ecosystem.
So it was great to hear, you know, all about the Samsung incubation program. What is the best way for people to connect with your team?
So we'll have a website up and running pretty soon. Until then, you can email us at info.jump@samsung.com.
So there were a lot of great sessions at SDC 21. What were some of the favorite sessions that you saw that developers should check out?
I think the first one I have in mind is the one on the foldable device. I have a fold device myself. I really, really like it. I get a lot of comment when people see it and then when looking at stuff with it. There's basically different modes, right? You can use the front screen and use it like a regular device, but the second you fold it at like a 45 degree angle, you want the app to react differently with the application. So a good example of that is, what if it became sort of like a Game Boy where you have your screen on one end,
sure,
and the bottom part are your controllers?
Yeah.
And there's a lot more use case like that. What about video conferencing tool where you can see other people on the top screen and the bottom screen is a whiteboard where people can collaborate? So I think there's a lot of use cases that can be developed, and we haven't even begun sort of scratching the surface of what can be developed. So I look forward to see more developers think about that, start developing around that, and see what they can come up with.
Excellent. That's great. Hey, Alec, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today. It was wonderful to learn much more about what you guys are doing at the Samsung Incubation Program.
Thank you very much for having me, Tony. It was a pleasure.
Excellent. Thanks. So One UI 4 was one of the biggest announcements we made at SDC, and I'm excited to have on the podcast head of the Core UX Group for Samsung Mobile, Hyun Kim.
Hi, I'm Hyun Kim. Thanks for inviting me, and it's very exciting to be joining podcast.
So One UI is the user interface installed on Samsung devices and was originally released back in 2019. For people who are listening to the podcast that might not be familiar with the details of One UI, can you give us a brief overview?
Oh, yeah, sure. One UI means entire software experience that Galaxy devices are delivering to our users, meaning it actually includes productivity experience and watching videos and privacy experience, onboarding experience, and all different services and apps and all that our customer can enjoy from Galaxy devices.
You gave a highlight session at SDC on the soon-to-be-released One UI 4 that was really insightful. Can you share some of the key takeaways from that session?
Sure. Ever since we launched One UI, we've been emphasized our users to be able to focus on what matters at each moment. So focus is one of the highlighted experience that we want to enhance as well in One UI 4.0. On top of it, we also want to deliver the comfort experience as well. Especially these days, pandemic gives our users screen fatigue, meaning the screen time is increasing and the number of apps that people are juggling and the period of time that they are looking at the screen is increasing. And then people are having eye fatigue, and we actually really need to deliver more comfortable experience for their eyes and for their peace of mind. So we took care of all those aspects when we designed One UI 4. So we took out visual noises as much as possible. We took out the number of colors. We took out the number of different font sizes, minimized the visual noises so that user can focus on and consume the important content and their task that they think it matters at the moment very comfortably. Also, we allow extra dim feature when user see the screen when dark. We want their eyes to be more comfortable. So we collaborate with Google, make the screen even darker than the darkest level right now. And we believe that would be more comfortable with those new features and new design.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I loved hearing about the natural interactions, these intuitive interactions that are being developed into a One UI 4. Talk about that.
Recently, people are juggling more number of apps and they are facing the more number of features and they're consuming more amount of content, meaning we need to provide very simple UI. UI need to be more higher level of intuitiveness. So we wanted to put more gesture on the content itself so that user can feel they manipulate and control content itself without looking at the UI component. So then non-visual component should help users to feel the reaction when user touch the screen. So we put motions, visuals, and physical feedback harmonized together so that when user touch the content and move the content and drag and drop the content, we want them to feel they are moving the real physical object to one place to another.
Yeah, and those vibrations, those are called haptics, correct?
Haptics, right. Every version of One UI, we enhance the haptics. And this year, the direction of enhancement of haptic feedback is not only just adding a right feedback in the right place, but also we add the haptic feedback with motion and visuals together to create a feeling of natural interaction in the physical world.
Yeah, so I know that that combination of sound, animation, and haptics will definitely provide for some very, very real-life device interactions. Talk a bit about privacy, because I know that privacy was mentioned in your session. What are some of the improvements related around privacy?
Basically, what we believe is transparency is very important. So providing peace of mind for our customer about the privacy. But basically, transparency is really important. The first one is we're showing all the apps list that are using users' personal data so that user can see which apps are using which data. And then user can easily access the individual apps permission turning on and off. Also, on upper right corner of the device, the screen is showing when camera or mic is on. Then icon is displayed so that user can clearly recognize, okay, camera is on, mic is on. And if it's not there, then user can feel safe. Okay, nobody is listening or watching me.
Yeah, that's great. So coming from One UI 3, what are some of the biggest improvements that we're now going to see in One UI 4?
improvement-wise, as a new experience, is self-expression. The more we research customers, the more we're sure that they're expressing themselves in many different ways, in many fun ways, and they want to express their emotions and thoughts and creativities and their identities and themselves as they are. In many different places in our Galaxy One UI 4, we want them to enjoy expressing themselves. For instance, we are launching a new tool for them to create a fun emoji pair animation for them to create their own content to express their emotions. But sometimes one emoji isn't just enough for them to express their rich emotions. People can choose two different emojis to put together and put animation to bring the combo to life. And then their chosen two emoji can be animated and delivered to their friends and family via Messenger. And it'll be very fun content, like an exploding head.
Yeah.
You can create your own content. There are many, many fun animation that we're providing. Also, there are presets. So we believe people will enjoy this in Samsung keyboard when they communicate each other and they will express their emotions in a very fun way. Also, we enhance photo editor a lot so that people can express their thoughts and creativity when they could picture and edit it and share. Every year we've been enhancing photo editor, video editor, but this year we redesigned editors so that user can see this very seamless and easy, simple, intuitive editor UX.
And I loved when you spoke about extracting wallpaper colors to be used throughout the UI experience.
Oh yeah, that's another very fun feature. Self-expression isn't just about what you send out. Self-expression is about your styles. You can style your phone. You can extract the color from your wallpaper. You also can pick your wallpaper from your gallery. So you can choose whatever your favorite pictures from your gallery and put your wallpaper. And then we're providing four different color palettes that can apply to your One UI. And you can choose one of the four options. Then your UI color will be changed and color schemes will be different depending on what you're choosing. And this is a little different than other like theming services because One UI's original usability and identity are still there, but the color, keeping the readability, usability, the color is going to be changed.
Yeah.
And you can still enjoy the benefit of One UI with only the color that you chose from the wallpaper.
Yeah, and you get that single experience across all platforms, meaning, you know, all of your devices, whether it's your phone, your tablet, your watch, Galaxy Book. Tell me a little bit more about that cross-platform experience.
We've been putting effort on the device ecosystem experience. This year, we launched the Wear OS for One UI Watch. And more than ever, we put the best seamless experience between Galaxy Book, Galaxy Watch, and flip and folder and phone and tablet. And we also launched the enhanced version of Quick Share, the experience for sending, receiving files between devices. Quick Share allows users to send and receive any type of files to your friends who has Galaxy and to your devices and receive as well quickly if the devices are around you.
Yeah, that's great. So tell me, when will One UI 4 be available on different devices?
We are really excited to be releasing One UI 4 update before the end of the year.
And to upgrade, is it as simple as going into your menu settings, your software update menu settings and just selecting the upgrade?
Yeah, you can update it. Go to settings and software update.
Excellent. So for developers that want to learn more about One UI 4, what is the best way?
You can go to websites like www.developer.samsung.com/one-UI.
So what other sessions at SDC would you suggest that developers check out?
There actually are many, many exciting, helpful sessions. But one of the sessions that I want to recommend is one of the highlight sessions. The title was What's New in Foldable? And they're talking about multitasking capabilities in Flex Mode to help developers optimize their own apps and optimizing web pages supporting Flex Mode by using the Web Shared Device Poster API.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a Tech Talk session that I liked called One UI Designing a More Intuitive, Approachable Experience. That was by Hyunwoo Yu. That was another great session.
Yeah, yeah, he's actually a group member in my group, and he has been putting huge amount of effort to prepare that session. And I know the content is very fun and exciting.
Well, thanks for joining me on the podcast, Hyun. It was wonderful to chat with you and about the upcoming release of One UI 4.
Sure, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
All right, next on the podcast is someone very familiar with the show who I've had on the podcast several times now, Dan Applequest from Samsung Internet.
Hi, Tony. It's great to be back on the podcast.
Excellent. So Dan is the Director of Developer Advocacy for Samsung Internet. We did an episode last year, and actually we did another episode earlier this year. So be sure to go check out those to learn a ton about Samsung Internet and what Dan's team's doing. But for those that might not be familiar with Samsung Internet, can you tell us what is Samsung Internet?
Sure. I'm leading the developer advocacy group of Samsung Internet. Our group is based in the UK, actually, and we're kind of an international team. What is Samsung Internet? Samsung Internet is Samsung's mobile browser for Android phones. It's also available for any Android phone, but it is shipped on Samsung phones. It's the purple planet. You know, if you're familiar with your normal Samsung icon set, your One UI icon set, that's us. That's the purple planet. We also just launched a version for Galaxy Watch, which is very cool. That's nice. Hot off the press news right now. So if you've got one of the latest Galaxy Watches, you can also download Samsung Internet for Galaxy Watch. It's based on Chromium, the Chromium project, which is the same open source project that Google Chrome is based off of. A lot of other browsers are based on Chromium. However, Samsung is also a major contributor into the Chromium project, Chromium open source project. So we're not just taking the Chromium browser and slapping our own UI on it, that we're actually contributing into Chromium. And we do an awful lot to build our own features and technologies into Samsung Internet. So, and in particular, we focus on privacy, so we protect your privacy with features like safe browsing, our own in-house smart anti-tracking technology, and the ability to install third-party blockers, ad blockers, tracking blockers, that kind of thing. So those are the kinds of things that we're doing to kind of protect people as they use the web, and that's such a key and important role that browsers have. We're also a great platform for progressive web apps. If you have attended any of our previous sessions at previous SDCs, you'll know that we're big fans of progressive web apps. Just briefly, a progressive web app is a web application that can be installed onto your device and looks to the user as if it is a native application, but it's actually running inside the browser. So a good example is Twitter has a progressive web app, PWA. Many other websites and web properties have progressive web app versions of their other applications. And in fact, we just participated in a separate conference, which just ran recently in collaboration with Microsoft and Google. And that had a complete focus on PWAs. And if you're interested in that, it's all streamable from pwasummit.org.
Awesome. So there were some great sessions at SDC related to Samsung Internet, both when it came to foldables and with extensions. Can you tell me what were some of the highlights for you?
Sure. So we're really, really excited to be able to speak at SDC this year about our work with foldables. So as far as foldables go, the exciting news that we were able to talk about is that we're launching an experimental API called the Device Posture API. It's being developed in the World Wide Web Consortium in the W3C as a proposed web standard with Intel and Microsoft as partners. this API is launched behind a flag right now.
Well, what does that mean, behind a flag?
It means you have to activate it in order to make it work. It's not going to work out of the box, and that's because it is experimental. The reason it's like that is because we want people to experiment with this API.
Sure.
It may change, right? And usually when APIs are in this kind of place where, or in a phase of their development where they might change, they're launched behind a flag so that developers get a chance to play with it, feedback into the process.
Sure.
And by the way, Laura from my team, who gave the talk on device posture API at SDC, is also the person participating in the standards committee, the W3C devices and sensors working group, and contributing that into that work. All of that is happening on GitHub. So there's absolutely an opportunity for developers to get engaged. And all of that information is in Laura's talk as well.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I had Laura on the podcast earlier this year, and she was an excellent guest.
Yeah, she's great. She's really good. We've also been working with some partners to get their feedback and to get some early implementations out there so that we can get some experience with this. In particular, we're working with YouTube and we're working with a company called Whereby, which is a video conferencing company based out of Norway.
Okay.
So these are good examples of where you might want to change the UI of your web application when the user folds the device. And that's basically the key element here that we're talking about. And that's also why when we're talking about this new API, we're talking about it in the context of responsive design.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of the focus of Laura's talk as well. Responsive design, meaning that the application itself responds to changes in the screen size, in the orientation, that kind of thing. So you are responding and being and adapting the UI to the user's needs.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the interactive code lab that Laura had been involved with there.
That's right. And that, again, can allow you to kind of sink your teeth into this API and, you know, with code examples and real tutorial about how to get up and running with this. So again, very excited to be able to do this in the virtual SDC environment.
Yeah, excellent. So next, let's talk about the extensions, the session that was given.
Right.
Tell me about that.
So, yeah, my colleague Seng Huan gave a talk on the current state of our extensions API. So we launched a third-party extensions API this year, and we opened that up to a wider developer community. By the way, we're only one of very few mobile browsers that actually allow third-party extensions. We also have... Within the browser itself, you can go to the extensions menu and you can find a list of the kind of approved extensions that we have.
Excellent.
But those are also downloadable from the Galaxy Store.
Okay.
But once installed, they become part of the browser, right? So extensions add new features to the browser, right? Just to highlight two of the extensions that are currently available for installation, we have the translator extension, which allows you to translate web pages from one language to another. That's actually developed in-house.
Really?
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool stuff. And we recently launched an extension from the web monetization company, Coil.
Okay.
That's a technology that can make anonymous microtransactions, micropayments to websites that you browse from a cryptocurrency wallet. And this is a kind of approach that is seen by some people as a replacement for pervasive tracking networks that currently power advertising on the web. One way of moving beyond that is to pay websites directly for the time that you spend on them.
Yeah.
So this is a really interesting idea. We've been tracking this for a while and talking to people at Coil, who are also participants in W3C and a lot of the other kind of developer activities that we're involved in as well. So we're very excited to be able to launch this extension. It's their extension, but it's launched in the Samsung browser, and you can install it and then you can start kind of paying websites through Coil for the time that you spend on them. It only supports websites that are subscribed to the Coil system, right? So it's
exactly,
yeah, it's early days on it, but it's something that's very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting concept, sort of like the pay as you go format.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't work for Coil, right? But one of the things I think is interesting about it is that those transactions are anonymous. So it's very privacy preserving, and it fits together with our philosophy of trying to enhance and protect user privacy.
Yeah, no, I know privacy is a big thing for you guys over at Samsung Internet.
Yeah, definitely.
So are there any other sessions at SDC 21 that developers should be sure to check out?
Well, I would suggest checking out the session called What's New in Foldables, first of all, yeah. Which is a kind of highlight session. It gives a high level overview and gives a lot of really good context about flex mode, what flex mode yeah. is, or what we're referring to as flex mode, which is, again, adapting the user experience of any application to the conditions of the folding device, and how that's so important from a user experience standpoint. And my colleague Dongwu actually gives a brief intro in that session to the device postures API, which leads into Laura's longer, more detailed talk.
Got it.
And he gives a little demo of how that works as well, which is very cool.
Yeah, I loved learning about all the multitasking capabilities with foldables. That was great to hear.
Yeah.
So if developers want to learn more about Samsung Internet, what is the best way?
Well, you can visit our page on developer.samsung.com/internet. That's got links to our blog, and we blog on Medium as well. Really, if you go to developer.samsung.com/internet, you can find links there to all the places on the web where we're present. You can also follow us at Samsung Internet on Twitter.
Excellent.
Where you can always find out what we're doing. And, you know, we try to keep that up to date with news about Samsung Internet, but also just the developer activities that we're participating in, the standards activities that we're participating in. Our team manages that Twitter handle directly. So it's a direct line to our team, and our DMs are open. So if you do have questions about Samsung Internet, you can feel free to DM us there.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, Dan, thanks very much for being on the podcast and giving us a little insight into the highlights with Samsung Internet and SDC 21.
Thank you, Tony. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. There were some great tech talks at SDC related to smart things and lots of great new innovations were shared. I'm excited to have Aaron Swift on the podcast, Director of Customer and Partner Strategy at SmartThings. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Tony. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Lots of tech talks and even a highlight session for SmartThings. So let's start with the session SmartThings Find, From Lost to Found. What were some of the key points with this session?
SmartThings Find launched last year as a service to enable customers to locate Galaxy devices such as phones, watches, earbuds, your S Pen Pro, like whatever you might leave on the bus or the train accidentally. It comprises more than 100 million Find nodes, and over 230,000 devices are located every day.
So a Find node, just to clarify, a Find node, is that like another device that's part of this network?
Yeah, like a phone or a tablet, a Galaxy phone or a Galaxy tablet. Running the SmartThings app with SmartThings Find. And as you saw, Philip and Muyun did a great presentation talking about other hardware OEMs can now integrate their products with SmartThings Find. So we have today our first smart tag device, which you could attach to your keys. That's available on the market now for everyone. But anyone who wants to can start building their own tag devices or integrating their hardware products into the Find Network.
Yeah, I think that opening up the SmartThings Find Network to the outside hardware OEMs is going to be huge and will absolutely expand the network tremendously.
Yeah, and they made a set of tools. There's this Find Device SDK in the test suites that make it really easy for any device manufacturer, whether it's BLE or ultra wideband, to start integrating their devices. If you're using a Nordic, Dialog, or NXP chipset,
yeah,
it's really easy to add the Find SDK and submit your device for certification.
Ah, that's going to be great. There was a session called SmartThings Build. Tell me, what were some of the highlights for you in that session?
That session was led by Jenny Brandmeier and Andy Sayer, our Director of Product Management and Director of Engineering.
Okay.
And they talked about extending our platform, which historically has been very end user focused. You are buying Samsung TVs and appliances for your home.
Yeah.
And now we're extending the platform for multifamily builders and apartment managers to put in their, you know, apartment buildings.
Okay.
There's a new tool set with that. that will allow an installer to go set up hundreds of apartments and hundreds of refrigerators and dishwashers and washing machines and apartments really quickly.
So is this giving them the ability to sort of monitor the what's happening with these devices? If there's, you know, you've got some sort of fault that happens within the system, they can detect that?
Yeah, so property managers will be able to integrate the, you know, or monitor their fleet of Samsung appliances from their property management tool.
Are there any APIs or SDKs related to this?
Yeah, so one of the cool things about this new offering is there's a dedicated set of tools, an API and SDK set, to make it easy for property management software companies like Entrata to come integrate and provide fleet management for all of the appliances.
The one thing that comes to mind, though, when you mentioned something about, you know, giving property managers the abilities to sort of monitor all these devices that are in these homes, comes down to privacy. What's in place related to privacy when you're talking about something like this?
User privacy is front of mind to us, whether you are a homeowner or a renter. And so what we've done is we put together a new set of permissions on the platform so that property managers only have the minimum access to data coming off of the appliances needed to troubleshoot for failures.
Got it.
If there happens to be something wrong, the property managers will be able to pull some information off of the appliances to troubleshoot the error, but they cannot tell that you're getting your 11 p.m. glass of milk before you go to bed.
Yeah, the last thing I need is my property manager knowing that I was in my freezer last night going for a little ice cream binge.
Right. And so we've made sure that users are front of mind in this.
That's great.
And that their privacy is protected.
Yeah, that's super important. There was also a session called Smart Things Edge, and I thought this was really interesting. This is where the execution is done locally without reliance on the cloud. Tell me more about that session.
In summer 2020, we announced major changes coming to our platform. This session ended up being such a long session with so many great speakers because we are really excited to be talking about those changes.
Sure.
A couple of my favorite ones are from Zach and Vlad talking about SmartThings Edge. Before, when you use SmartThings to turn on a light with a motion sensor, your motion sensor would detect motion in your home. It would send that motion event to your hub, up to the cloud. The cloud would tell you to run that automation, send the event back down to the hub to tell the light bulb to turn on.
Sure.
And that happened quickly. But it's not quite as natural as still being able to go turn on the light or the local motion sensor in your home.
Yeah.
So what SmartThings Edge does is it took the device events and the automation events and was able to start processing them locally.
Yeah.
So now when you use that motion sensor to turn on a light, motion is detected, that goes to the hub. The automation is processed on the hub and sent back over to the light to turn on without ever having to reach out to the cloud to confirm that event.
You're like, what would be a device where you needed like instant, you know, reaction time between the hub and the device?
So all Zigbee, Z-Wave, and Wi-Fi devices have the ability to run locally on the hub now with automations.
Okay.
So one of the most natural feeling ones is that example I gave with the light. You want lights to turn on right away.
Yeah.
Similarly, if you want to be walking into a room and having the temperatures change or having the vents open and close, a thermostat adjust, those are great use cases for local automations as well.
Okay.
What we're doing now is we're investing more features into the Rules API to make more automations run locally.
Got it.
So over time, you'll see more and more complex automations be able to run locally on your hub.
For Edge devices, is it a closed ecosystem or can anyone build for Edge?
Great question. So we've released a collection of Edge devices on our SmartThings developers GitHub repository that anyone can reference. And then any hardware OEM can add their fingerprints or their devices to that repository. Anyone can build their own Edge devices if they want to.
Wow, that's great. So I saw there was a highlight session, Building the Future Smart Home Today, that talked about the new Matter standard. Can you tell me what was shared in that session?
Matter is the foundation for smart homes of the future. Over 200 companies have come together to develop a standard that is going to be the basis for smart home devices to integrate in the future.
Would you say that like today the ecosystem, is it pretty fragmented?
Correct. There are all sorts of different smart home standards from all sorts of different companies out there. And each one operates just a little bit different from each other, which makes it hard for device manufacturers to integrate with each platform. Matter is going to take that fragmentation and create a common application language and data model that will apply across all the different smart home platforms, regardless of brand.
Yeah, I think that's going to be great, especially for consumers, so then they don't have to like decide between which technologies they want to purchase, that it's all going to kind of seamlessly work together.
Correct. And if you buy a light bulb with the Matter logo on it, you'll know that it'll work with SmartThings or any other Matter supported ecosystem.
That's awesome. That is super, super great to hear. So you've talked a lot about all these different technologies related to SmartThings. What's the best way for developers to learn even more about SmartThings?
The best place to go for more information is developer.samsung.com/smartthings. From there, you can learn more about building edge devices or cloud devices, or stay tuned for future updates on our investment in Matter.
You know, all of the SDC sessions on SmartThings were great. Are there any other sessions that you would recommend developers check out?
I'm personally a bit of a TV nerd, so I'm really excited for redefining the experience of watching TV and what's new in Samsung Smart TV services.
Yeah, no, I know a bunch of the people over at the TV Plus, and it's a great group and doing a lot of amazing things over there. A lot of great content coming out.
That's exciting.
Excellent. Well, hey, Aaron, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. It was great chatting with you and learning a bit more about SmartThings, and looking forward to chatting with you again in the near future.
Great. Thanks, Tony.
So next, I'd like to welcome Roger Kibbe to the podcast, Senior Developer Evangelist for Bixby, Samsung's Intelligent Assistant Technology. Welcome, Roger.
Well, thanks. You and I talked, it was probably over a year ago.
Yeah.
Actually, on the podcast. So I'm excited to be back and talk to you about what's new and what we just saw at SDC.
Yeah. So it was, I think, about a year and a half ago. Safe to say that a lot's happened since then. So tell me, what is the latest with Bixby developers?
Yeah. So we just announced several things at SDC, or highlighted some things that changed. First thing I want to talk about is some of the ways we've made it easier to develop for Bixby. And these weren't new announcements, but kind of highlighting some of the changes we've made over the past year or so. And so a lot of these were focusing on improving the developer experience. One of the things we did is we created a new training UI. So use the training UI to create natural language training. And one of the great challenges in voice experiences is to get your natural language training working well. After all, it's the way users interact with all the business logic that you've written. So that's a great challenge. And so we built a new UI to make that more intuitive and hopefully easier and simpler to build great experiences. We also built something we call the Component Gallery, because Bixby is on multimodal devices. There is a UI for a Bixby experience. And the Component Gallery is a WYSIWYG component editor. So I'm writing some code for what we call Bixby views. I can pop up the Component Gallery, configure something graphically, and it just dumps the code right in. So it just makes it easier. And then finally, we made it super simple to load a capsule directly from GitHub. So we have a bunch of sample code on GitHub. And now directly in the studio, you can load that sample code from GitHub without having to go and clone it or download it and go through all the previous hassles you had to do. So just an example of some of the improvements we made to make it, frankly, just easier in your day-to-day life as a developer developing something for Bixby.
Awesome. So let me ask on that component gallery. I actually was watching one of the SDC sessions on that. It's pretty cool. So just to clarify, this is where like on the device, when you give a voice prompt and the device Bixby reacts to that, you can then have graphic images appearing on the device. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So you can either, when you're basically, whenever Bixby is communicating with the user, you can actually have a graphical UI on there that's complementary. And it also can have things like buttons on it, or sliders or controls. Because one of the things is all these Samsung devices, so, you know, the phone, the watch, the television, the TV, all have a UI on there. So Bixby is not just a voice experience, but it's really a multimodal experience. So you need to build graphical UI. We built a tool to make it pretty darn easy to do so.
So I heard a bit about Bixby on Windows. Tell me about this new announcement.
Yeah, so brand new. So Bixby is available on the Galaxy Book notebooks. So those are the Samsung's newest notebooks. So Bixby's right there. There's a command key to launch Bixby. You can turn on Hi Bixby so you can talk to your Windows notebook. You know, you can ask it questions. You can have it control smart things, home automation. You can ask it to find files. You can ask it to change Windows settings. So right now, you know, it's focused on a fairly narrow set of things, but I'm super excited about, we have this brand new device, a Windows laptop. What can you do with a voice front end in front of that? And what are ways where we can make it simpler and easier for a user to use their laptop by talking to it? To my mind, there's a lot to be discovered there.
Sure.
What we created is kind of step one in a journey toward, you know, making voice a modality that makes it easier for us to interact with our technology, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. And you had mentioned smart things. There was a session at SDC titled Enabling Intelligent Voice Control on Your IoT Devices. And I know in that they talked about smart things and a lot about Bixby. Tell me, what were some of the key takeaways for you from that session?
Yeah. So we introduced something called the Bixby Home Platform, and it's a way of interfacing what you've done with Bixby with voice with some of the SmartThings capabilities. And the best way to explain it is for me to give some examples of what you can do. And so first example is I might say, hi, Bixby, turn on the dining room lights. Now, if I'd set up dining room lights in SmartThings, boom, work great today. But if I hadn't set up something called dining room lights, today Bixby would reprompt you or say, I can't find dining room lights. That's not a really good user experience.
Sure.
So what you can set up with the Bixby Home platform is a lot more smarter logic. So, hi, Bixby, turn on the dining room lights. Bixby could say, sorry, I can't find dining room lights, but you have kitchen lights, you have bedroom lights, you have den lights. Which one would you like to turn on? And so then you kind of, the user asked for something that it didn't understand, but instead of airing out, it's like, well, I know you wanted to turn a light on.
Yeah.
Here's the lights I can turn on. And so I kind of prompted the user to, you know, what's the right command you want? Much like we would do, frankly, a natural conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
If you asked me something that I didn't understand, I'd probably go, can you clarify that, Tony? Right?
Yeah.
And this, is a little bit of adding that kind of logic there. So I think that's one great example of just a quote-unquote error becoming a success.
Sure.
The other thing I want to highlight, and I think this is where it gets really interesting and frankly pretty sexy to me, is where you're actually taking the voice input and you're taking what the IoT device, its state and what it's sensing and combining them for some intelligent response.
Okay.
So let me give you an example. So I could say, hi, Bixby, turn on my air purifier.
Yeah.
By an air purifier, boom, today it would turn it on, all good. But now with the Bixby Home platform, I can set it up. So when I say, hi, Bixby, turn on the air purifier, instead of instantly turning on, I can go query the air purifier and say, hey, you know, what's the air quality?
Okay.
And if air quality was moderate or acceptable, boom, I just turn it on and the default fan speed, maybe medium, is on. But let's say the air quality is poor. Well, then when I query it back, it says, oh, air quality is poor. Now I can say, well, you want to turn it on and the air quality is poor. I'll turn it on, but I'm actually going to turn on and turn the fan to high. So you're getting this feedback loop. It's really, you're getting the user what they ask for. You're getting the state of an IoT device. You're combining those together.
Yeah.
And then the action is just smarter. To my mind, this is pretty, I say sexy and exciting, because if you think about this, this is getting into much more intelligence.
Sure. Right?
The devices know, I know what you asked for. I know the state. I'm going to take the most intelligent action based upon those two inputs. And that's what Bixby Home Platform is all about. It's really a development tool that lets you build experiences like what I was just talking about.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I loved when he said in the session that they're planning to open this up to partners and also to third-party devices.
Yeah.
The reach is going to be huge.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think that's one of the big things with the SmartThings ecosystem, right? is it's not just for Samsung devices, but it's for, you know, devices from dozens or hundreds of manufacturers. So if I can read some information on the device, I can get that information and I can do something very logical and just make things work more intelligently. Isn't that what we all want from our technology?
Exactly. Yeah. So on that note, you know, something I saw also very interesting in that session was the Bixby Home Studio. I absolutely love the whole idea of, you know, with your mouse, you can just drag and drop it and build out, you know, these experiences all without coding.
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts on Bixby Home Studio.
So like that is the tooling behind what the experiences that I just talked about, so that you could intuitively build out. I use that air purifier example because actually, if you look at the session, they built out that exact experience. And I think I encourage people to go take a look at that, because that is a really good way to kind of understand what I'm talking about and hopefully get you excited about, wow, there's something cool that I could build as an end user experience.
Yeah. And the demo they gave was pretty in depth. I mean, this is not just a, you know, they didn't just skim over the, you know, the concept of Bixby Home Studio. They actually went through and built it out. It was pretty nice. So that was an awesome session, but I know there were a bunch of other sessions all kind of related to, you know, smart things and Bixby. What were some of the other sessions that you would suggest developers to check out?
Yeah, so I would definitely check out the two Bixby sessions that we mentioned. And as you can see, a lot of the focus is on Bixby and smart things.
Yeah.
So if you're a Bixby developer, I would suggest you check out some of the smart things sessions and understand that. Because I think a lot of the focus of what we're looking at is, hey, how do we get home control of devices to work super, super well with voice? So that, and that really is a dance between what Bixby is doing and what SmartThings is doing and building that together. And that's what the Bixby Home Studio is all about. So understand the two sides of the equation, and then you'll understand and hopefully can build some really cool stuff.
Yeah, I love the collaboration that's happening between SmartThings and Bixby. So if developers want to learn more about Bixby, what's the best way?
So first thing would be go to bixbydevelopers.com, and that's a homepage for everything Bixby. That's where you download the studio, where you have our documentation, and just a bunch of information. The other thing is we have a pretty active YouTube channel, so just look for Bixby Developers on YouTube/Bixby Developers. And then pretty much everything we do that's new, or we introduce a new YouTube video, we would definitely post that to Twitter.
Okay.
So that's Twitter, and that's Bixby Developers. And then I do a weekly like tech tip of the week, like a 2-minute video tutorial, and that's posted to Twitter as well, or also Facebook. So you can find that on Facebook. And then finally, I am the host of a podcast.
Yes.
The podcast focuses on all things voice, not just Bixby. It is called Bixby Developers Chat. You can find it in your favorite podcast player, or you should be able to ask your voice assistant, "Hi Bixby, play Bixby Developers Chat podcast," or another voice assistant, and all of them should be able to play it. So that is another resource.
That's awesome. And it's a great podcast. I have listened to your work. You do an excellent job from one podcaster to another.
Well, thank you. That's the kind of compliment you like to hear, because we all understand the challenges and what you need to do to make a great podcast.
Yeah. So let me remind everyone, go check out that episode we did. It was in the first season with Roger. You can learn a bunch more about Bixby and how to get started creating voice assisted capsules.
Well, thanks, Tony. Really appreciate it. And go check out those SDC videos to get a really more in-depth understanding of the things we talked about today.
Thanks, Roger.
Thanks.
One of the biggest announcements we made this past year is our latest watches now run on a new operating system called Wear OS, powered by Samsung. And joining me on the podcast today is Soo-Yun Kim, one of the software engineers here at Samsung that has worked closely on our new watch ecosystem. Hey, Soo-Yun, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me today. My name is Soo-Yun Kim, and I'm a software engineer at Samsung. I'm very excited today to briefly recap our SDC sessions on Samsung Galaxy Watch and Wear OS powered by Samsung, which we jointly built with Google.
Yeah, so there were several sessions related to the new watch ecosystem and the unified platform. What would you say are the benefits of the new Wear OS powered by Samsung?
So there are many, many benefits, but first, we have created a seamless and deeply connected experience across not only Samsung Galaxy devices, but also for Wear OS smartwatches and Android smartphones. With this new unified platform, we want to expand our ecosystem, bring greater scale to our developer community, and at the same time, delight consumers with a variety of choices, from watches to watch faces and apps.
Yeah, it's true. Not only is the developer community going to expand, but also the consumer reach is going to grow even wider. Can you talk about the growth of the smartwatch market over the past several years?
Well, the smartwatch market is continuously growing. And in fact, according to Counterpoint Research, shipments grew by 35% for the first quarter of 2021 compared to last year. And after Samsung Galaxy Watch 4 launched this August, we once again recognize this explosive growth and will continue to work hard to meet the demands of this growing market.
Yeah, I agree. As smartwatches get smarter, the market demand is only going to increase. Can you tell me what are some of the new and exciting apps available for the new Wear OS powered by Samsung?
So users can enjoy familiar Samsung apps like Samsung Pay, SmartThings, and Bixby. But now Google apps are also available, like Google Maps and YouTube Music. We are also partnering with a wide variety of partners and developers on apps that are available for download from the Play Store on your watch. On your phone, there is also a dedicated category for watch apps, so you can easily browse and download them directly to your watch.
Yeah, I love that YouTube Music is now available on Galaxy Watch 4. Many people are buying the watch because they like to track workouts and have an active lifestyle, and listening to music has always been a key component to working out. Can you tell me how is the new Samsung Galaxy Watch 4 taking advantage of the health and wellness market?
So we want to help users keep track of their health status and fitness activities. So we brought groundbreaking health features and sophisticated sensors to our new Samsung Galaxy Watch 4. In selected markets, users can check body composition, blood pressure, electrocardiogram, skeletal muscle mass, basal metabolic rate, water, fat percentage, and so on.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing that with this little device on your wrist, you can now track things like skeletal muscle mass and fat percentage and can conduct an EKG test. Can current Android developers build watch apps for the new Wear OS powered by Samsung and publish just as they've done before?
So we aim to make every step of watch app development, from ease of build to market launch, as simple as possible with this new unified platform. So yes, Android developers, you can continue to build your apps within this familiar environment using Android Studio with watch emulators and existing and new Wear OS specific APIs. Developers can also deploy and increase exposure for their apps with the watch apps category on the Google Play Store.
Yeah, so my background is in graphic design. And for me, my biggest question was, were we going to build a new tool that would allow designers to create watch faces for the new unified platform? And when I learned the answer was yes, I was really excited. So what are some of the new exciting features with the new Wear OS powered by Samsung watch face design tool, Watch Face Studio?
Anyone can download, design, and publish watch faces for Wear OS on the Play Store. You don't have to learn how to code and just need to explore the new design tool, Watch Face Studio. For more details, there is a separate Tech Talk session on this.
Yeah, so that session was called Introducing the New Watch Face Studio and was a great overview of the new tool that showed just how easy it is for someone to create a watch face without any coding. What are some of the other sessions from SDC 21 that watch face developers should check out?
Well, first, there is the highlight session, Watch Ecosystem, A New Era, where we cover the new Samsung Galaxy Watch ecosystem at a high level. Then there are Tech Talk sessions. Build Your App in the New Watch Ecosystem is where we specifically talk about watch app development and run through a range of APIs by inviting a special guest from Google. And there is also a session on a new health platform that runs on Wear OS powered by Samsung.
Yeah, there were a lot of great sessions all related to wearables and lots of new opportunities for developers. What is the best way for developers to learn more about the new watch ecosystem?
For developers, I encourage visiting the Samsung developers and Android developer sites. You can go to developer.samsung.com/galaxy-watch and also developer.android.com/wear.
Hey, Siyan, I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast today and giving your insight into the new watch ecosystem. Super exciting times.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for inviting me.
So I'd like to welcome back to the podcast Eric Klonginger, who leads developer relations at Samsung. Eric and I did a pre-SDC podcast where we gave a little preview on what to expect at SDC 21 and highlights from some of our past developer conferences. If you haven't checked out that episode yet, be sure and go back and give it a listen. Eric, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Tony. That was a lot of fun. You know, we've been doing conferences for years, and even though SDC 21 was a virtual conference, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work by a lot of people at Samsung, yourself included. And, you know, I'd like to really give a shout out to everybody who put in a lot of effort, a lot of late nights and all on it. So I hope that the people who listened to the keynote and the spotlight session and all the technical sessions got something out of it.
Yeah.
And hopefully next year we can do this live.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to that. But yes, it was a great virtual conference. So I've asked Eric to join me on this episode to chat about the SDC session that I gave called Grow Your Podcast Audience with Samsung.
Earlier this year, Samsung made it really easy for device users to listen to podcasts. Can you share what is the new podcast platform?
Yeah, so the new podcast platform, it's super easy to access. From your device on the home screen, all you do is swipe left, which is our minus one screen. That is Samsung Free, which is basically free entertainment from Samsung all in one place. There's four tabs there. So there's the watch tab, which is if you wanted to stream TV. There's the read tab, if you wanted to read news. There's the play tab, which is playing games. And then, of course, there is the listen tab, which is all about listening to podcasts.
So who can access all of that content with Samsung Free?
Yeah, so Samsung Free is available on all of our latest devices. So this is basically the Note devices and S series going all the way back to S9, plus all of the versions of Z Fold and Z Flip. Right now, Samsung Free is only available in the US, but we are expanding to Europe soon. I've been told that by the end of the year, we will be hitting some European countries.
That's great. So why did we launch a new podcast service?
Samsung's podcast strategy is to make it easy for the millions of Samsung device users to listen to their favorite podcast shows and discover new episodes quickly and easily. And also, it gives publishers an impactful way to reach new listeners and really expand their audience.
So how do those publishers bring their shows to Samsung?
So grab your URL from your podcast RSS feed, and you can find that from your podcast hosting provider. Take that RSS feed and go to samsungpodcast.com. Sign up for a free Samsung account, and all you do is fill out a short form that allows you to import your RSS feed URL. Typically, it takes less than 5 minutes for you to fill out that form, and that quickly, your show is now available on all of the Samsung Free devices.
So what's Samsung Free and the podcast platform doing to help publishers get their shows discovered?
So our editorial team is always looking for new and exciting shows to promote. Every week, we feature about 7 new shows on our homepage, and these promotional features have been extremely valuable for publishers. In fact, there was one publisher in mind recently, Marty Ray Project Chats. He saw a 2,000% increase in downloads just after being featured on our homepage. So that was really great to see the value in that promotion for him.
Yeah, that's incredible numbers there. So you're the host of our podcast, the Samsung Developer Podcast. Is that how you got involved with the podcast platform team?
Exactly. They reached out to me when they were first building the service and eventually asked if I would help promote it. I said, absolutely. That's when they asked me to present at SDC. So you can check out my session and learn much more about the new podcast platform.
Right. So the SDC content that is on the website is available for anyone to see at any time. So are there any other sessions on the SDC 21 website that potential podcasters and developers should check out?
Yeah, well, I would say what really got me excited was seeing all of the game focus sessions that we had up there. So yep. There's one session called Galaxy Store Games Focus Developer Friendly. That was a great session on all the new game focused improvements for both gamers and developers. And there was another session called Games for Everyone Samsung Instant Plays. It's another great session for game developers to learn how to bring their HTML5 games directly to Galaxy Store, making it easy for users to play games without having to download and install anything.
That is an exciting new way for people who are interested in playing casual games to get into something new without having to download hundreds of megabytes of content. So I think that's going to be a game changer for all of us.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Tony, thank you for giving us some insight on the new podcast platform and also for sitting down with different people associated with SDC 21. It was a fantastic virtual conference, and it was great to hear about the sessions on One UI, the incubation program, Smart Things, and Bixby.
Yeah, and I also like the interviews that we did on our new watch ecosystem, you know, chatting with Dan again on Samsung Internet. That was great. And of course, our new podcast platform. I'd like to thank all of my guests today and to you, Eric, for taking a moment to chat about SDC 21.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Looking to start creating for Samsung? Download the latest tools to code your next app. Or get software for designing apps without coding at all. Sell your apps to the world on the Samsung Galaxy Store. Check out developer.samsung.com today and start your journey with Samsung.
The POW podcast is brought to you by Samsung Developers and produced by Tony Moreland.